I have not any intention to move the damn team. If I did, I will tell you about it, okay?
The Colts had to sneak out of town at night. It degrades a great tradition of a city in football. And I guess the third thing would be, I hate to see a man cry.
It's not your ball team. It's not our ball team. It's my family ball team. I paid for it and I work for it.
Well, I get chills just hearing it right now. Hour number two on a special edition of Sportsline, looking back on what happened 30 years ago to this community when Robert Irsay took the Colts out of Baltimore and took them to Indianapolis. We will get to the phone calls later, get to the text line and emails and tweets throughout the program tonight. But we do have two special guests with us right now covering this and looking at what happened 30 years ago from a media angle and covering Baltimore in general 30 years ago. I am very happy to have in studio here someone I do know very well over the last 30 years, in fact, my dad, Rich Hollander.
Hey, Brett.
Dad, thanks for coming on. And, of course, you were, what, a couple centuries ago, a news reporter here?
Several centuries ago, correct.
And you covered the Baltimore closely before that for the News American.
Correct.
And also joining us right now is Jane Miller from TV 11. And, Jane, thanks for coming on the program.
Chuckling.
Hey, Jane.
A couple of centuries ago.
You know, I just got to remind him, you know, every once in a while.
Your dad and I worked together, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For a long time.
It was a while ago, yes.
And it was fun.
Well, we're going to pull some old audio from a story you filed, Jane, on, I guess, the day after. We'll get to that coming up. Also, we'll hear from our former news director here on the radio side, Mark Miller, and Vince Bagley, who called in. And if I'm not mistaken, guys, I think Vince was the only person, because he was a part of the broadcast, allowed into the old Owings Mills facility. Jane, do you have any recollection of that? Because
I think I do recall that, because I think we had some pictures inside there. Correct.
All right, so let's set the stage, Dad. Let's start with you. And the days leading up to it, was this thing considered imminent?
Well, I think it was, because a couple of days earlier, the state legislature passed legislation allowing the state eminent domain over the team. So the axe was about to fall on the Colts. And however, 2 months earlier in January, Mayor Schaefer said, "We are not building a new stadium." And I think that set in motion the Colts seriously looking at Phoenix and Indy as possible landing sites.
And Jane, leading up to this day, what was being talked about? Was it a daily story on the 6 o'clock news?
Absolutely. Okay. It was a daily story that consumed many of us. It was, I mean, I'd have to go back and look at my calendar for 1983 and 84, but, I mean, it was even more than just days. I mean, this was a constant tension. Rich would remember, too, for months and months and months about the possibility that Irsay was going to pull that team out of there.
Mm. All right, so this guy, by the time 1983, 1984 rolls around, is completely unglued. And from a political standpoint, we've seen the video. We've heard some of the former mayor, William Donald Schaefer, at that time. They're still trying to pull strings to figure this out. But, Dad, you said that they said they're not going to build them a new stadium.
Correct. And moreover, no public money was allowed to be used to give to a team to build a stadium. They could give them a loan, but
That's
they could
right.
not build a stadium for them.
Hmm. And Jane, I found this interesting, a very cool experience that we can share with the audience. I went back through a lot of our records here at WBAL, and it's an old binder. I don't know, Jane, if you even know where they keep this stuff, but I'm looking back at it's almost like I'm holding biblical paper. It's old, it's yellow, and I'm looking back at every day through that time. And you did a couple stories, Jane, after the fact about the Orioles' future in town. So there must
That's
have been
correct. There was a, well, obviously,
yeah.
because they were also playing at Memorial Stadium, and you know nobody was happy with the condition of Memorial Stadium and the fact that it was aging. And I mean, obviously, it wasn't as old then as it was ultimately when everybody moved out of it, but. But, yeah, I mean, it suddenly threw into, you know, kind of flux, the whole question. The Orioles were going through different changes in ownership over the same period of time. So, yeah, there's no question that it was a very uneasy time for professional sports fans in the city of Baltimore.
All right, let me get this straight. Jane, you go to the complex in Owings Mills. Dad, you get on a plane and go to Indianapolis.
Correct.
All right, so what happens there? What are you chasing in Indy?
Well, that's a good question because there was
the Mayflower van.
The Mayflower vans. Well, that you know, the headquarters was in Indy. The mayor of Indianapolis, William Hudnut, who happened to spend his last several decades as a citizen of Maryland, ironically, was friends with the owner of the Mayflower van lines. He was the one who made the call and said, arrange the whole thing. Interesting question, what was done there. In some ways, it was a fait accompli, and there wasn't that much to do, but there was an ongoing lawsuit which would have brought the Colts back to Baltimore, which ultimately was dismissed. But it was a wonderful story. It had all the elements. It had power politics. It had intrigue. It had suspense. It had bigger-than-life characters. So it was a great story to chase when we were there.
Well, and it became very personal, too, with Irsay and William Donald Schaefer. I mean, clearly this was – I mean, everybody knew that William Donald Schaefer's first love was the city of Baltimore. And to have this guy, you know, threatening to essentially steal away in the middle of the night, which is what he did – you know, Brett, what was interesting, I thought about this today. We're not on the date quite yet.
No, we're not.
Right.
They're 28th, 29th, but it was exactly this kind of weather.
Yeah, weird.
It was snowing. It was one of those March, you know, late March snows. It was very wet, heavy snow in the middle of the night, and the next morning it was still very gray and dreary. The weather perfectly matched the event. In terms of, you know, losing this team in the middle of the night and pulling out of there in those big moving vans.
So, Jane, you get to the complex, and what do you see that day?
Well, the vans pulled out, and then there was just this kind of lingering procession of employees that we interviewed. And I've actually gone back and interviewed some of those folks again. When I guess the year we went to the Super Bowl with the Ravens, we went back and talked to some of those folks. Loudy Loudenbach.
Oh, Loudy, yeah.
I mean, he was there. It was just, this was on the complex, which is now, I think, part of Villa Julie. Am I correct?
Stevenson, they call it now, but yeah.
Stevenson, correct. I mean, it was yes, off of Owings Mills Boulevard. And, I mean, now they've moved to much, you know, finer digs, but on the other side of Owings Mills. But, yeah, it was at that complex, and it was that whole morning was filled with people kind of coming out to, I think they had to see with their own eyes that they had that they were gone. It was just empty, vacant. I mean, some of the stuff was still there, but they really loaded up everything and got it out of there.
Well, let's hear this report you filed a day later from Owings Mills.
Under the mask of darkness, the moving vans started pulling away from the Colts complex. They were taking away equipment, furniture, the trophy case that told of the Colts tradition, and they were bound for Indianapolis. The last of the trucks left in the dreary gray of morning. Not far behind were Colts employees and coaches. They were coming from a meeting with Colts lawyer Mike Chernoff.
There was nothing left to take. They took everything. Everything that was in our desks, on our desks. Mike Chernoff had us in a meeting room with no chairs or no table. Everything's gone.
He told you absolutely the deal is made and the Colts are going to Indianapolis.
Yes.
The building's empty and we've made the move to Indianapolis, and that's about the only thing I can tell you.
The Colts' exodus was well protected by police and security, but it wasn't needed. The only reaction of the few diehard fans who came to watch was sadness.
Heartbroken's a good word. When you've got over half your life involved with this ball club, like I have.
With nearly everyone gone, the last word from the Colts' offices came from a team employee who'd just become a former employee.
It's over, so I just didn't want you guys freezing out here, getting all wet and sick out of this, you know, because it's finished.
About noon, two security guards locked up the gates. The sign is still on the building, but this is no longer the home office of the Baltimore Colts. And the only thing left is a memory.
Would another team make Baltimore forget the Colts?
You'll never forget the Colts.
Jane Miller, Action News 11.
Action News. Incredible stuff there, Jane.
I think that was Loudy at the end of that piece.
Yeah, and it's such a sad face. And I saw the pictures today on that story that you filed. He was so sad. And I mean, as all Baltimoreans were, but it was really just incredible. What a time capsule, what that day was like.
You know what? I think the lingering effect of all of that was that Baltimore had this huge chip on its shoulder.
Mm.
So we all knew in 2000 when the Ravens, I mean, now the Ravens are there, and, you know, then they go to the Super Bowl, and we get to Tampa to play the Giants in the Super Bowl. And all of us who'd been around in 1984 and all of the time leading up to that knew that this was about way more than the Super Bowl. This was about knocking that chip off of Baltimore's shoulder for being, you know, ignored by the NFL and shunned by the NFL when expansion came. And I think that that was the most therapeutic thing that ever happened to the city of Baltimore, was the Ravens winning the Super Bowl in 2001.
You may recall when the CFL Colts came, or Stallions came here, initially they'd wanted to call them the CFL Colts.
Yeah.
And the NFL sued to stop the CFL from using that nickname.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Incredible. And I said this earlier in the first hour, that it does speak to all of our complexes here in Baltimore. Someone has to be out there to get us. It doesn't make any sense that for 11, 12 years, they would deny Baltimore an NFL franchise. And then, to be honest, guys, in some ways, those 11 or 12 years, that was our finest hour. It spoke to heart and grit and determination and hope. And, Dad, you went to chase the story of all of those things.
All those things.
Went to Hawaii and
Phoenix. All the NFL owners' meetings each time. You know, we were left at the altar. There was no expansion team for Baltimore. But looking back from a business perspective, Indy built the Hoosier Dome on spec without any team there. They offered Irsay a $12 million loan, a $4 million practice facility, and guaranteed sellouts for him. So from a pure business perspective, he was getting quite a bit there.
Now, Jane, were you at that famed presser at BWI?
I was not there, but certainly I remember it clearly. I remember it like it was yesterday. I mean, you can see him standing up there, you know, at that podium, and oh, it was horrendous. You know, it was what everybody thought of the owner of the Baltimore Colts. I mean, it was all right there before you.
Let me share you a quick anecdote about that. After this was over, Schaefer was telling me one day that he had gone to a Colts game with Irsay and two other people when Irsay first bought the team. And Irsay had the owner's box, and Irsay, this is Schaefer telling me the story, Irsay summoned the beer vendor over to the box and purchased four beers. And Schaefer, as he's telling me, said, "Hey, this guy Irsay's a pretty nice guy. He's buying me a beer." And Schaefer paused and said, "And then he drank all four himself."
You know, it's funny about William Donald Schaefer at that time. It's not funny, but this is what else he was dealing with, because I remember doing these stories. I mean, he was dealing with the Colts. And then the SK plant was a huge debacle during that time, because SK wanted to pull out and move to a cheaper state. Mm. And it was located over in East Baltimore, in the heart of East Baltimore. And this was after, you know, already the manufacturing industry was declining. So it was a really difficult time. But I think it's the only time I saw Schaefer cry was after the Colts left.
Yeah. And
so what was really interesting about this is each of the news outlets in Baltimore played it differently. Clearly here at BAL Television, by assigning Jane and myself to cover the story, they saw it as a news story. But The Sun, for example, sent Vito Stellino, their football writer, to Indy. Channel 2, I believe, sent Scott Garceau, who was a sports anchor.
Right.
So some news departments were seeing this as purely a sports story with a news angle, and others saw it, probably for what it was, as genuinely a news story.
Oh, and there's no question, Rich. And, you know, in 1995, when, you know, the whole issue of the Browns moving to Baltimore started to, you know, bubble up, and we also treated it the same way, is that we treated it as a news story. Now, we had some of our sports guys involved with it, obviously, but it was, I mean, I think we've always understood that the role that our professional sports teams play in this region is much more than a sports story. It's a news story. And has always been treated as such, and you know, certainly now. I mean, you know, on many given days, you'll see the Orioles or the Ravens occupy space in our news block,
mm-hmm.
Because sometimes sports is news, and certainly in those days it was.
Incredible! You guys are both big sports fans today. Could this happen today with our amount of media coverage that's out there? Of course, teams are going to leave cities. That is just the reality of the world. We can debate that almost in another venue, whether that's okay or not. There are a lot of financial considerations. I'm talking about a drunken owner getting in front of cameras and microphones, like almost like this ship is being driven, but no one's at the wheel, so to speak. Could that happen in 2014?
Sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Really?
And yeah. Will, correct, and does. That's exactly right. Oh, absolutely.
See, to me, in this world, it'd be very hard for other owners, the league, not to care about their standing in PR. And we play this cut again, and maybe Jay can get here before we say goodbye. This, to me, is amazing. When Ursay gets to Indy at the Hoosier Dome, RCA Dome, whatever it was called, and it's his big welcome home party. He just leaves Baltimore, and he says to this crowd that he's trying to woo and establish as season ticket holders, he says, do we have it, Jay? Let's hear it.
I mentioned before, it was not a monetary decision. It was a decision that you people, the press, have hounded my family for the last 2 years, and my family was not about to take any more of your hounding. I think I put it to the point. When I woke up one day and saw that the governor had put a bill through the legislature, which I think is against anything in the United States that people here have freedom. So that means now that anybody that has a plant in Maryland and the state or the city wants it, that the state and city could say, hey, that's mine.
And then he adds on top of that his famous line, this is not your ball club. He's telling this to the people of Indianapolis. This is my ball club, my family's ball club.
Well, it was that day or a day later when he made his 24, almost 25-year-old son the vice president and general manager of an NFL team.
Incredible. Incredible times. It's almost hard to believe that happened. Let's hear this cut here, Jay.
It's not your ball team. It's not our ball team. It's my family ball team. I paid for it and I worked for it.
That was not said to the people of Baltimore at the end. That was said to the people of Indianapolis.
Well, the spin at that point, I interviewed Hudnut several times, and he was not your typical politician. He's a Republican mayor of a large city. He was Phi Beta Kappa from Princeton, and he was an ordained Presbyterian minister. Hmm. And his argument was, we did not steal the Colts. Baltimore lost the Colts.
Mm. Yeah, I remember that. Correct.
And guys, where does this rank as the all-time stories that you chased down as far as just its connection with the community and the angles that were involved over a long stretch of time before and after the move date almost 30 years ago?
You know, I think it's just it's one of those stories that so makes up the fabric of Baltimore. I joke with this among some of us who've been around for so long. We talk about that kind of the character that if you're away for a period of time, you really start to miss it. And I think that it's just one of those, you know, 9, 10, or 11 stories that I've covered in the 30 years I've been doing this in Baltimore that makes up that very tough fabric and really shows the soul of this region. You know, there are some places that would never blink if they lost their football team, but not here. I mean, it felt like they were losing a member of the family. People did everything possible to try to win over the NFL's blessing over the next, you know, 15, 16, 17 years. And then certainly you can see now that the Ravens are one of the most successful franchises in the NFL and one of the most valuable businesses in the country. So there's no question that this is a region that considers its pro football franchise, you know, part of its soul. And I would add that, you know, that you see now what's going on with the Orioles, where they have a much better performing record, and you can see the same thing happening with people that have become, again, very much reattached to the Orioles.
Would it be in the top five, Dad?
Probably not. I was rummaging through old boxes of videotapes this weekend in preparation for this, and I did not save any stories from the Colts' move.
Hmm.
That may have been a reflection that being in Indy for 2 or 3 weeks, there wasn't a whole lot to shoot there. And it wasn't a particularly visual story at the time. And also, your mother was 6 months pregnant with you,
yeah.
And we were anxious to get back home.
I'm anxious to get
home. See
that
and your two older siblings.
All right. Well, we got to go to traffic here. Jane, thank you so much for joining us and sharing. It's always important, I think, to look back.
All right.
Take
care,
Jane.
No problem, Brett. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, Jane. And Dad, hang through a quick break here. We'll come back with more next.